We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. And Jack, we're talking about a Nets win over the Milwaukee Bucks, 125-123. I guess two MVPs is better than one, right, Jack?
It's not too bad. I also have just one thing to start with for DeAndre Jordan.
I'm sorry for the things that I've done.
Just thought I'd recreate the little meme there. He was awesome tonight. Great little win over the Milwaukee Bucks, the best team in the East. Ooh, I don't know. Maybe the Brooklyn Nets, baby.
Yeah, I think so, Jack. We'll talk about that and plenty more in the buzz. As always, you can find us on all streaming platforms, including OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. But, Jack, where do you want to begin? You want to go with that final stretch of the game?
Yeah, let's go to the final stretch, Nick, because it was stressful. Really stressful. There was defensive stops from Bruce Brown and DeAndre Jordan. There was Kevin Durant and Joe Harris buckets. There was James Harden being James Harden. I don't know. The clutch three from KD off the James Harden miss. He gets the offensive board, kicks it out. And in my heart of hearts, as soon as I saw him take it, I'm like, it's in. It's in. Yeah. I don't know. How did you feel?
Yeah, I felt like it was going to go in. I saw a couple Warrior fans tweet. It's like, as soon as KD gets the ball off the offensive rebound, you know it's going to be a made three. Top of the key like that, lined up, wide open. It was just almost kind of too easy. And then the Joe Harris play too, you know, knocking down that three, running that set for him. Nice little screen from DeAndre Jordan. Just like I said to you before, air, like having a guy like Joe Harris on the floor when you have these elite scorers and playmakers is just gravy for the offense. It's just like this added extra layer that's almost impossible to defend because you cannot send extra attention to Joe Harris when you have Kevin Durant, James Harden, and in the future, Kyrie Irving on the floor. Like, it's remarkable. It's insane that this much offensive talent is on the same team.
Scary hours haven't even begun yet, Nick. You know, it's a little bit spooky right now, but it ain't scary yet.
It'll be scary for the teams in the East, though, and I thought this was a great test for them. Obviously, they don't have that full synergy yet. They don't have that full chemistry, but they were able to win a game down the stretch against a team that's been together for years. You know what I mean? Other than Jrue Holiday, Chris Middleton, Brook Lopez, Antetokounmpo, like they're all guys, they have chemistry, and the Nets were able to make just one more play to them and win by 2 points. You know, a lot of credit to the team and just the offense being so efficient down the stretch and then getting the final stop. Obviously, 3.5 seconds isn't a ton of time to defend, but they still were able to force Chris Middleton to take a shot that he probably didn't want to take.
Yeah, and that's what happens when the MVP of the league can't shoot a jumper. Simple as that. You know, he's a spicy pea with some bigger biceps and bigger deltoids. Look, I love Giannis Antetokounmpo, but DJ was great on him tonight. You know, you tweeted out early, Nick, that DJ was going to be the one guarding him, and I think a lot of Nets fans are like, oh, got the heart in their mouths. But the way the game plan and the way that it was executed by DeAndre and the rest of the players, look, he still gets his number just because he gets offensive boards, he gets these easy buckets, he gets 1 3 and one little mid-rangey here and there. But I thought that for the most part, it was Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday that were doing the damage.
Yeah, I thought DeAndre Jordan really did a nice job on Antetokounmpo. You know, we saw Jared Allen in the past, but Jared Allen didn't necessarily have the muscle and the strength that DeAndre has. And I think that really made an impact. You saw multiple times in this game, Antetokounmpo tried to body DeAndre Jordan and it didn't work. Like a couple times he was able to bounce off and still hit a hook or a fadeaway. But, you know, DeAndre did a good job tonight. I thought it was pretty impressive and something I think the Nets would go back to in a playoff series. Like, I think they feel pretty comfortable with that, especially having the option of Jeff Green on Brooke Lopez.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and for the record, DeAndre Jordan tonight, 6 of 6 from the field, 12 boards, including 4 offensive ones, had 3 dimes, a steal, and 2 blocks. We were saying that we didn't necessarily expect what he produced against the New York Knicks, but this is where it matters. And I think that you have now, if you add someone else to it, you add like a Dwayne Dedman for the likes of, say, like a Nikola Jokic, those guys, or a Nikola Vucevic, those guys who can get us the perimeter and make it harder for DJ Moore, then that's going to make his life even easier. And now DeAndre Jordan, we don't expect this for the next, you know, 57 games. As long as he's producing this level of intensity, this level of execution and physicality and determination and grittiness in the 16 games that we need him for, then I'm totally happy. But yeah, this was maybe DeAndre Jordan's best game as a Net, Nick.
Yeah, I think it was one of the best games he's had at least this season. I think we'd have to look back at last year. He did have a couple, you know, relatively good games for the Nets last year. But I think in terms of like meaningful and like proving that he has a role in this team in the postseason, I thought he did that tonight. And like you said, there's going to be matchups where he's just going to get cooked. Like, he can't defend Jokic. He can't defend a guy like Anthony Davis. Anybody that's really going to pull him out to the perimeter and has, you know, a little bit of a bag, like, he's going to get cooked. And that's where the Nets need to find somebody else. But for some of these matchups where you don't have to move and the opposing center is so paint oriented or the other team lacks a lot of 3-point shooting. The Bucks don't necessarily lack the 3-point shooting, but they obviously have Antetokounmpo, who doesn't shoot really, and you're okay playing the percentage against him. You know, DeAndre can find his way on the floor. And I thought offensively did a good job catching the ball, which is always important for him. And I thought his positioning was a little bit better too on some of the plays and making himself an easier outlet for Kevin Durant or James Harden.
Yeah, I thought he got those guys into good spaces a lot. Yeah. Now, that's something that he normally does, but I think it was more pronounced tonight against a higher-level defense. And one of the best defenses of the past couple of years. You know, they've been consistently top 5, top 3, if not the best in the league. So for the Nets to score 125 points on the Milwaukee Bucks, I mean, they're going to score 125 points on any other team in the league. There's no doubt about that. It's going to be themselves that are going to stop them. You know, I thought DJ was great tonight in a lot of aspects. He had his moments, but I think that the fact that I can't really remember, it's not the overriding factor of his performance. The overriding factors of his performance was his physicality, was his tenaciousness, was his ability to get KD, Joe, and James Harden in good spaces, his offensive rebounding, his tenacity. It's a level of engagement that you want out of him quite consistently, because he's an all-star in his previous past. When he has a great point guard next to him, he looks so great. And a lot of the lobs early were reminiscent of Spencer and DJ, but at the end of the game, we saw that synergy right there, where it was just like, oh yeah, that looked exactly like Clint Capella. I've seen that a million times from James Harden, because he draws the defense, he times always that lob pass to perfection, and it finally did work, and it worked at a crucial juncture of the game. So I think that they're developing their synergy. It's going to get better, and I think DJ is doing all the right things. And I mean, 38 minutes from him. I mean, when was the last time DeAndre Jordan played 38 minutes in a basketball game, Nick?
Honestly, I didn't even realize that. And I felt like he played majority of the second half. He really didn't get much of a breather. You're right, Jack. I'm honestly surprised he can still do it. You know what I mean? Like, that's a lot of minutes. I know he played a lot in that Memphis game that went to overtime, but impressive stuff, especially given he was guarding Antetokounmpo almost all of those minutes. Like, that's a tough job, and he was banging with him. So credit to DeAndre, obviously a couple turnovers. I did feel like there was a couple times where he was actually hacked and he didn't get the call. And I was just like, you know what? That's okay. Like, he probably really only had 3 turnovers tonight. You still don't want that many, but overall, nice game for him. And like you said, it's not the – we typically will recap, and you'll have so many negative memories of DeAndre in your head, and that'll be what we recap. But tonight, a lot of positive stuff and something hopefully he can build on moving forward and give him more confidence.
Absolutely. And like I mentioned, you know, this is – we can't expect this – from DeAndre Jordan for a 73-game season. He doesn't just he doesn't have the motor to do so, and that's fine. You know, for a guy in his mid to late 30s, you know, it's gonna happen. And not everyone is James Harden and Kevin Durant and can play 35 minutes a night. Especially James Harden, I think he's really working his way into form, and he's gonna
40
be close
minutes
to,
for Harden tonight.
Yeah. And I think that part of it is to get his conditioning to an extent. And it doesn't look like he's tired out there. I thought there were moments tonight where Kevin Durant looked a little bit tired. But overall, you know, and obviously that strip on him late in the game, I don't think it was tiredness. I think it was just really good defense.
Yeah, I don't even think it was a strip, Jack. I think he just lost the ball. Like, I watched the replay, and it had just he kind of grabbed it, and it slipped out of his hand a little bit. Maybe Middleton got it, but it just kind of felt like more of KD made a mistake.
Yeah, and look, that happens. You know, you can't be perfect. Even Kevin Durant can't be. And, you know, he was pretty close to it, Nick. I mean, I always feel like I'm like, man, Kevin Durant looks a little bit off. And then he finishes the night like 48% from the field, 30 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 blocks, 8 of 9 from the free throw line, 2 of 4 from 3. What more can we say? I got it. Someone called, I think, I can't remember if someone called me out or someone called out on like just saying how. It's like the SpongeBob Eddie Murray's yelling, but he's coming off an Achilles. It's like the Jason Tatum is only 19 thing. That's become our version of it. It's insane. He is. My dad's just like, I was saying to him, it's just like every single slow motion replay of Kevin Durant hitting some shot. What was your favorite shot, Nick? Because I have a feeling I think you know what it's going to be.
I think when he hit Chris Middleton with the dribble package with the combo, and then he went off that one-legged floater. That was just like, that's what guards do. That's what Kyrie Irving does. And Kevin Durant did it, and he made it look as just as smooth. I mean, it's just remarkable how talented he really is. And like you said, Jack, you know, a little rusty maybe in the first half, but second
half. How is this a bad game for him, Nick? Like, this is, we're talking like, oh, man, Kevin Durant has a shit game, 30 points, 10 of 21 from the field, 8 of 9 rebounds. And it's just like, and he hits a clutch three. He has one of the most insane highlights that we've seen this season. Like, I feel like that highlight was probably as good as the highlight that wasn't on Rui Hachimura where he yacked on him, because the fluidity of that of this highlight and the composure and the creativity was just like, dude, that's something, like you said, it's something Kyrie Irving and James Harden and Steph Curry and these guys do.
Yep, and he made it look just as smooth. I mean, it's remarkable, his handles. I thought I think he showed off his handles a little bit more than normal tonight with Chris Middleton, you know, being such a good defender, having some length, and he felt comfortable hitting some of those behind-the-back dribbles. I thought he went to that move a lot tonight. It was great. And like I said, a little rusty in the first half on a shot, like you said. I think he was tired towards the end of the second quarter because he hit a lot of front rim. And, like, we haven't seen a ton of that other than the Russ game. So, it's just crazy. I liked when he got downhill. And, I felt like Giannis fouled him multiple times in the follow-through, and I don't understand why that wasn't being called. And I also felt like Giannis set, like, multiple illegal screens on him in the fourth quarter, which you know about because I was in your DMs about it.
Yeah, Nick is one of the few guys who watches the game. It doesn't let the emotional aspect take over his ability to still see the game objectively. And, yeah, he sent me some screenshots of Giannis sort of having his legs, you know, wide, like you're doing that like groin stretch or whatever.
It looked like he was in a defensive stance more so than a screen stance. And I'm just going to say this, based off of what I know, like typically your feet are supposed to be around the width of your shoulder. Like the more you look like a triangle, the more illegal the screen is.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think Kevin Durant is maybe alongside LeBron James, and you can probably add in Kyrie Irving to a lesser extent, the guy who gets fouled the most but doesn't get the calls. There was a three on him where he took it, and the guy just follows through. I can't remember if it was like Connaughton or Forbes or whoever, and closes out at him, and they just knock him to the ground. And I'm just like, is that not a foul in today's NBA? If that was, you know, Chris Middleton or Drew Holiday, it would have been called. I think the rest were pretty poor on both sides, but it seemed to be more pronounced for the Brooklyn Nets.
I can't believe they missed the one where the three-point shot hit the line. At the end of the game, Kevin Durant was livid. I mean, I couldn't see perfectly from the angle, but I'll trust Kevin Durant that he didn't grab if it hit the line. But I was kind of annoyed on the missed call, the call that they had on KD when he blocked Chris Middleton from behind. Like, I don't even understand how that could have been called a foul. And the way in which he blocked it, it's almost impossible unless there was something underneath that I didn't see.
To make the argument, to play devil's advocate, Christian Winfield of New York Daily News made the argument because he was at the game. And
yeah,
he said that there was a follow-through of, or of either, KD's arm hitting Middleton's head, so it wasn't necessarily the ball. Again, playing devil's advocate for the sake of it, but that's a challenge I think Steve Nash needs to make, because it's your superstar, you know, it's his third foul at a key point in the game, and I think that some of his foul trouble, as well as probably a little bit of lethargy, didn't allow KD to just have full rhythm. And he doesn't need it, but it certainly does help. You know, it turns a 30-point game into a 40-point game.
Yeah, I saw a little frustration on Kevin Durant tonight. Especially there was a play where he didn't get the call on one end, and on the next play, he just ran straight at Giannis's chest. Yeah. You know what I mean? I was like, okay. I don't really hate those fouls. I'm a big fan of like running through screens occasionally just to kind of set the tone or forcing the refs to make a call. You know what I mean? If you're feeling like the screens are a little bit late or they're a little bit there, that was actually a legal screen by Giannis. But I'm just saying, like, sometimes that's what you just got to do. Not when you have four fouls, though.
What did you think of the shove at the start of the game, Nick, where Giannis apparently flops like his Trae Young?
Yeah, I was like, I really didn't get that. I mean, like, Kevin Durant was just running and he just kind of stopped. And, you know, like, you put your hand on someone's back to stop. I didn't think it was anything malicious. And, like, Giannis made it seem like he just got trucked over by, like, I don't even know, Bruce, like, Shaquille Brown. O'Neal. Like,
yeah.
I was going to use a football reference, but then I realized he probably wouldn't have gotten it, so.
The listeners, you spoke about the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers. I know some of these things. But, yeah, I had a bit of a chuckle at it because it's just like with Steve Nash, son to Trae Young, Kevin Durant is sunning Giannis. And apparently, I believe Kevin Durant is an idol of Giannis Antetokounmpo as well. So it's just like there's this little bit of evilness and swagger that I've mentioned about before about the Brooklyn Nets that I really do like and I'm all about, Nick. But yeah, Kevin Durant was incredible tonight. To me, again, this wasn't the best version of Kevin Durant because foul trouble certainly didn't help him. There were some times where defensively he was a bit out of sync. But I think overall, you know, if this is the worst version of Kevin Durant, and it seems to me this is an average game from KD going forward, I think, you know, when he speaks to the media after the game, he's going to be like, yeah, I didn't have my rhythm. Yeah, I was a little bit sloppy on passes, and that's because he had, you know, three turnovers again. But he still did have six assists. I think James Harden probably was a better performer tonight, Nick.
Yeah, I really did. I thought James Harden did a good job of kind of carrying the team at different points. And just he really does a great job of making his teammates better. You know, another 34-point game, 12 assists, 6 rebounds, did have the 6 turnovers, but, you know, some of that was on him, some of that was on DeAndre Jordan. And, you know, this is James Harden really excelling without his 3-point shot falling. You know, he was 3 of 10 tonight, wasn't necessarily missed a couple open looks that he typically hits.
3 of 10 the other night as well, Nick.
Yeah, so it's like he's not, when his 3-point shot is in rhythm, he's just literally unstoppable. But I feel like he's been driving a ton in Brooklyn, and he's done a great job getting in the paint. You've seen that floater, I think, more than we've seen in Houston, at least, you know, based off of what I know and what I saw in the playoffs and what I watch a good amount of the Rockets. And I just feel like he's going more to that and going more to the paint. And it also could be a component of there just being more space, like playing with Joe Harris, playing with Kevin Durant, and then obviously Kyrie Irving. And then Jeff Green was knocking down threes. And I felt like the Bucks really started to respect the Nets' 3-point shooters in the second half. And that just let James Harden go to work.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Durant 2-4, Jeff Green 4-5, Joe Harris 5-7, 1-2 for Landry Shamet. You know, and overall the Nets finished over 48% from there, 15 of 31. But you make a good point, Nick, because James Harden has a bag. His bag is as deep as anyone else's bag. Maybe the only guy who's got a deeper bag than him is his teammate and one of his good friends on this team. He just has an ability and an intelligence that I think is underrated. You know, he just knows, I'm like, you know what? I've got to push a little bit here. I've got to kick this one out. I've got to get the boards. I've got to run the break. I've got to slow it down. I need to find DJ. I need to go to the floater. He's just his basketball instincts are just so on point. And that floater, my dad was making a comment on it. He's just like, it's so pretty and just so effortless.
Yeah, it's a little different than what you typically see, the way his hand placement on it. It's got a little twirl to it almost. It's an interesting shot. I mean, it goes down, so it doesn't really matter. But, you know, you asked me your favorite play for my favorite play for Kevin Durant. What was your favorite James Harden play?
Oh, the James Harden play. I don't know. Some of his defensive plays for me, Nick. I did a breakdown for Nets Republic this morning on his game the other night, his debut for the Brooklyn Nets against Orlando. But tonight, again, it was his defense. He did have a block, and I think that there was other times where he just looked really strong and really savvy. And his ability, when you have him and Bruce Brown and the back line in your backcourt, there's just strength aplenty out of those two. So, I mean, there was a lot of good plays. You know, you love the step backs whenever he hits them. You love the lob plays. plays. You love just the dribble, dribble, dribble on Dante DiVincenzo. And then it's just like, dude, like, you're not going to – the Nets have probably – James Harden is the hardest guy to defend in the league because you're just so wary of fouling him and giving him contact because he knows how to draw it better than anyone else.
He does a great job of showing the ball and then pulling it. It's, like, funny. I don't know why people swipe.
Yeah, it's hard. It's just a natural instinct,
yep.
And James Harden forces you to make bad decisions on the defensive end. And he did only get to the line six times tonight. I thought he probably could have got there a couple of times more, but it was a great game for him. And I thought that the way he is like stepping up as an on-court leader as well, Nick.
Yep.
You know, you see some of the timeouts as well, the behind the scenes. If you're watching an NBA League Pass, him chatting to Steve Nash in timeouts too, and the way he's helming the second unit. You know, he's making, like you said, his teammates look better. And look, the Nets bench right now is struggling a little bit outside of probably Bruce Brown. You know, they're getting spurts, if anything, out of Reggie Perry, TLC, and Landry Shamet. But the way that James Harden still is able to, I want it to be more selfish, if anything. Maybe not when Kyrie gets back. We'll see how those minutes are staggered. But James Harden, incredible tonight. 41 minutes for him. And like you mentioned, all the stats. He's a goddamn superstar.
Yeah, I mean, he's another MVP-level player on this team. And my favorite play was when he had Jrue Holiday on him, and he kind of had his back turned. And then, like, a second later, he hits a step back over Jrue Holiday. And I'm just like, yo, that is literally amazing. Like, he did it casually against one of the best defenders in the NBA. And it just goes to show how talented he is. It just – sometimes it almost feels too easy. And when Kyrie's here, I'm just super intrigued to see how defenses react. Like, I'm not sure what they can do.
Jrue Holiday was really good tonight, you know, like, and you and I are really good fans of him, and not just because he's been a Nets art. We've seen him in person for the New Orleans Pelicans against this team. I'm just like, how do you actually get past this guy at half court? And, you know, he was guarding, you know, 108 feet or however long the basketball court is for James Harden. And he made life tough for him, but he still had an incredibly efficient night. And, you know, he sometimes to make some turns and stuff, but, you know, James Harden was still, you know, the best player probably on the court tonight.
Yeah, and I think this is why it's so hard when you have, like, an elite defender and then you have somebody on the floor that's not necessarily an elite defender, because it's so easy to force the switch with ball screens. You know, you saw the Nets do that a ton tonight. Get Jrue Holiday off, you know, James Harden, or get Chris Middleton off Kevin Durant, and they go against Dante DiVincenzo or, you know, whoever the weak link is on the Milwaukee Bucks. Yeah, or for, like, I thought the Nets did a really nice job of that tonight, and that's just something they're going to be able to do more with Kyrie Irving, or it's almost going to be set up where they already have the miss.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This match, because this is a team, this is one of the better suited teams to defend the Nets. We talked about that before, given the defensive players they have. So if they can do this against the Bucks, I'm not sure many other teams in the NBA stand a chance.
Yeah, I mean, the Nets aren't at their fullest iteration right now. They have three guys to still add to their roster. They still have their third superstar to add in. And it's James Harden's second game. And yep. It's Kevin Durant's 15th game. And the Nets should only get better, especially defensively. Steve Nash has made comments that. We'll get to some quotes after the game. But
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying there, Nick. And in that sort of respect, I do remember you alluded to earlier, especially in some of the Atlanta Hawks games, the fact that the Nets weren't attacking the mismatch a lot. And it seems to me that that's coming down to the players just being like, you know what, get me that mismatch. And James Harden and KD communicating, and DJ being like, nah, I don't need that screen there. And if not, doing some off-ball screening action and some pistol action to get Joe Harris a three, or Landry Shamet a three, or Jeff Green a three, who was, you know, incredible again tonight. The starters, Nick, we are pretty confident with those five and Bruce Brown. That's six guys I'm confident with. You add in Kyrie Irving, that's seven. You know, if you Mike D'Antoni, you're probably just playing seven anyway. But I wouldn't mind having, you know, maybe if it's Tyler Johnson, experiment a bit of time with him, or adding some other guys, some depth into rotation. You know, Trevor Ariza, Dwayne Dedman. We'll get to some of the names later on that have been reported by the New York Post. But yeah, the starting five tonight, and I mean, I don't know how often we're going to get that out of DJ, but I'm confident enough.
Yeah, I thought they played really well as a unit. You know, there was just like a lot of cohesion there. And then they just have a lot of size when they play DeAndre, Jeff Green, and Kevin Durant. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a substantially bigger unit than what we're used to saying. And like you said, Jack, James Harden is strong. Like, he's like as strong as a lot of forwards in the NBA. So that's like playing with another good rebounder out there. And we know Joe Harris is no slouch when it comes to toughness. So, like, I mean, it's really going to be interesting. I'm intrigued to see what the starting lineup will be when Kyrie Irving's back on Wednesday, which he most likely will be.
I'm thinking that it'll probably be Harris off the bench. That's a guess from me, because we've seen him come off the bench already. I mean, Green has as well. I mean, I think for defensive stability, you'll probably keep Green out there, and just for some extra size. Yeah. And a guy who can just do that, those little things, because you've got enough offense. And Joe Harris is greatest, despite the fact that he is a pesky defender, and he's got some strength, and he's always trying. He doesn't have the athleticism and the ability to be as versatile as a Jeff Green does. So that would be my guess at this point. I don't know. Do you have similar thoughts, different thoughts?
Yeah, I think that would probably make the most sense. And obviously, Kyrie is an elite three-point shooter as well. You know what I mean? So it's like he can do some of the stuff that you do with Joe Harris, and he can do more offensively. And I think Joe Harris will be better utilized and get more shots with the second unit. I think he has a really nice chemistry with James Harden. You know, a little pick and pop we've seen between those two. We've seen it with him and Kevin Durant too. So I'm not really worried about Joe. You know, if he's starting or coming off the bench, he's going to get shots. He's just that good of a player. And it's just going to be, like I said, gravy for the offense to have a player of that caliber coming off the bench.
It's insane. You know, we mentioned it before when he has come off the bench and how he's impacted Caris LeVert. And it's good to hear, hopefully, positive things for our guy Caris going forward. Check out Full Access Paces for more of that with Corey Waldron. But yeah, Joe Harris tonight, you know, 7-12 from the field, 5-7 from three, 20 points for him, 6 boards, did have a dime as well. He hit the pull-up twos now as well.
Yeah. I mean, there was that one pull-up two in the first quarter where he, like, off the dribble, body bounce. Yeah, that was just pretty stuff. I mean, like, he's just been hanging out with the superstars a lot. You know, it's just kind of rubbing off on him. But I felt like the fact that he hit the threes early, it just almost, like, makes the defense even more stressed. It's like, shit. Like, we have to deal with Kevin Durant. We have to deal with James Harden. And then we got this dude running around screens, knocking down threes. And if we leave him open, there's, like, a 99% chance he's going to hit it. Like, he's been that good. And, you know, he continues to, you know, hit our expectations and more.
He's incredible, Nick. And I think we expected this, but it's still seeing it in action is insane, because he makes the right decisions as well. You know, whenever it's just like, all right, I'm a little bit caught here, I'll kick it out. Or, you know what, I'll drive it here. I'll put the pressure on the defense, and then I'll go for the layup, or I'll go for the little mid-ranger. I'll stop and prop. You know, 5-7 from three as well.
A lot of great backdoor cuts tonight.
Yeah, I think that's something that is forcing as well, and creates space for Harden, and creates space for KD, and it's going to create space for Kyrie as well. You know, there's going to be so much offensive versatility. We know that the Nets are already a top offensive team. They are only going to get better, and the second unit is going to be solidified with having a Joe Harris out there. I think it's going to do wonders, because he's already done it, and he doesn't care. Like, he's got his bag, he's got his money now, and he's got his nice little shiny haircut.
And he's got more open threes than ever.
It's just easy for him now. Basketball is easy for Joe Harris. Can you imagine him cooking on, like, who is it, Bobby Portis and, you know, Pat Connaughton and DJ Augustin in the second unit? Like, he was going up against, you know, Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, Dante DiVincenzo. Their starting five defensively, the Milwaukee Bucks, is probably the best defensive starting five in the league. And the Nets still scored 125 points, and Joe Harris still goes 5-7 from three.
Yeah, and they did it a lot of times effortlessly. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like they were putting a lot of effort. And a lot of the turnovers the Nets had weren't necessarily because the Bucks defense was so good. It was just a lot of, like, casual passes or just bad plays. Like, there was a couple times where they just threw it out of bounds. You know what I mean? So, Nets clean that up offensively. They're just going to be able to do even more. And Joe Harris, the only starter without a turnover. You know, can always count on Joe taking care of the ball. What did you think about Reggie Perry tonight? Only 9 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, there was, I think, against these sort of teams, I think against the elite teams is where Reggie Perry is going to get found out a little bit. I think that Matt Brooks made a good point on his timeline saying that he's probably a better exterior defender than an interior defender. He's better on the perimeter than he is down low because he doesn't really have the verticality. He's not a great rim protector. You know, Brook Lopez has got some size on him. Giannis has got some size on him. So I think that it's a key weakness of the Brooklyn Nets right now. And Reggie Perry's strengths don't really fit in and solve any of the weaknesses that we do have. So he's going to learn from this. And I think it's... You don't shove him out of the rotation, you know, especially without another backup center. But thank God that DJ was playing as well as he was. And I did like as well. I was absolutely loving, you know, hearing the inside tracks on TNT and hearing DeAndre Jordan providing some leadership. And he's just like, you know what? I don't care you're a rookie. You need to be communicating out there. I think that we give a lot of hate to DeAndre Jordan, but he deserves a lot of love tonight, not just for his on-the-court play, but he's continuing to be a leader off the court too.
Yeah, and even when his role is kind of fluctuating, I think he still provides that leadership and just a good locker room guy. You know, it's been noted by a lot of different Nets. And like you said, Jack, I think Reggie Perry tonight, you know, against the elite teams, it's going to be a little harder for him. He doesn't have the experience in the NBA and what to do. And obviously defending in offense like the Bucks have, you know, not even just the defense is elite. They have Giannis, they have Chris Middleton, they have Brook Lopez, they have a lot of good offensive players. It's going to be tough for a rookie to go out there and make plays. But I thought there was a couple solid plays for him squeezing there. There was a couple, you know, rookie plays in there too.
Yeah, I think he's a great rebounder. He's a tenacious rebounder.
So is that a lot of effort on the floor?
He does, and I think that that's one thing that you want from the rookies. You know, at the end of the day, as long as they're going to make mistakes, and I think that during the regular season, that's when those mistakes are necessarily as magnified. Is he going to be a playoff player? I don't know. Probably not. But I do also like that, you know, James Harden is still a willing passer to him. You know, I think James Harden is still going to make this kid better, you know, especially the last game we saw some really good minutes out of him. You know, he did only have 2 points tonight, 2 dimes and 4 boards. But I do think that he is going to learn from these experiences. And, you know, I think you learn more from when you play against the better teams and what you need. You go, okay, oh, well, this is where I need to learn. This is where I need to be smarter. Yep. This is where I need to communicate better. And, you know, against the teams like the Knicks and whoever else, you know, it's almost window dressing on what is already, you know, what you already know about yourself. So, look, Reggie Perry's going to improve. He's a young kid, and he's going to continue to get better.
Yeah, exactly. And hopefully by the time it's the playoffs, he's a third center or somebody. You know, he doesn't have to be in the rotation, but this is good experience to get why guys are injured and we still have those roster spots. But I thought Bruce Brown had some significant plays tonight. You know, 8 points, 6 rebounds. It felt like he had way more than 6 rebounds because the rebounds in which he did have were just ginormous. And he was like muscling 3 or 4 guys. And I thought he was about to rip Dante DiVincenzo's head off for that jump ball.
I love his reaction as well. And for those that, no, obviously we do an audio podcast, but he's just like shaking his head. Nah, you ain't getting that ball off me, my dude. I would not want, if I was trying to get a rebound of Bruce Brown once out of 100 boards, or and then I was going to die, I'm dead. Like, I'm counting my prayers already. That dude is just like a phenom on the boards. And it might be, yeah, and we're talking, and I one thing I do really like is I like the chemistry he has with James Harden as well. He just does all the little things. You know, if there's a miss, you know, Bruce Brown's going to get there. He's going to throw up off the glass and get some points. You know, he's an incredibly tenacious defender. I don't know if I've seen him actually go under a screen or, like, do the carousel of it, sort of roll back. Sort of. He just is like, you know what? Brook Lopez, I'm just going to get through you, my guy. My shoulders are bigger than yours anyway.
He makes him pay, Jack. Like, that's what he does. If you're going to set a screen on Bruce Brown, he's going to make sure you know you're setting a screen on Bruce Brown and not other Nets.
His shoulders are, I'm going to marvel at his shoulders consistently. The OnlyFans content, Nick, Bruce Brown is getting plenty
Bruce
of...
Bruce Brown's shoulders getting its own account.
Oh, dude, my dude. It's going to be Joe Harris 3s, Joe Harris 2s, Joe Harris everything, and Bruce Brown's going to get a cheeky OnlyFans as well. But he was incredible, especially that board late in the game, Nick. That was a timely, clutch Bruce Brown. We expect that from him now. You know, we expect him to contribute meaningfully. And I think, listening to national podcasts, they're like, yeah, Bruce Brown's kind of this nice guy. Who's going to be contributing elsewhere? If you're watching Brooklyn Nets basketball right now, you know Bruce Brown is going to be contributing from henceforth. And from henceforth, since as soon as he got those minutes earlier in the season, he's a master. And he's going to continue to contribute and do the little things that the superstars shouldn't be doing because they have such a burden elsewhere. And Bruce Brown does the gritty things. He gets those boards. He flies up. He fights through screens. He makes it tough for the opposing offense. And, I mean, you can't say enough good things about this guy, Nick, you know, because what he does well isn't necessarily the flashy things. And I think that makes it easier for him because that's where his strengths do lie. You know, I was talking about Reggie Perry and how a lot of his strengths lie where the Brooklyn Nets already have strengths, whereas yep. Bruce Brown's strengths lie where the Brooklyn Nets' weaknesses are. They need strength. They need tenacity. They need ferocity in terms of making and typical for opposing offenses. He's an incredible rebounder. And yeah, we got him for bugger all. Thank you, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you said, Jack, he just fits the role that the Nets need. And the things that they need him to do, he can do every single night because it's not making shots. You know what I mean? It's usually effort-based things, so he can consistently do that. And we kind of joked around at the time when the Bruce Brown trade happened that, oh, is this a trade meant to happen if, you know, the James Harden trade goes through in a few days? And the fit with James Harden is even better than it was before James Harden, just because that's what the Nets need. And like you said, getting some good chemistry, when you have such a good defensive guard like that, he can help make up for some of the other mistakes you're going to see out there.
Absolutely. He does so many things well and so many things that aren't going to show up in the box score. And he's impacting the Brooklyn Nets and their success on the defensive end. You know, he's going to be incredibly important down the stretch for the rest of the season and in the season. Saying good things about Bruce, you know, whenever he does he gets a great board, he hits a great shot, he gets whatever it is, you know, there's probably people in Pennsylvania right now that can hear me yell Bruce. I yell it so damn loud. I'm not going to do it here because we've had some queries about my audio before, but man, I just Bruce, can't get enough of him.
Yeah, I mean, he's a really great player. He's obviously a fan favorite already this early into the season. What'd you think about some of the other bench guys in TLC and Landry Shamet?
Poor, Nick. I think that they made a lot of mistakes. And I don't think that this is where we sort of mentioned before that, you know, the lights are at its brightest when you're going up against the best teams in the NBA. And, you know, there was a lot of mistakes from Landry Shamet. You know, you look at the box score, 11 minutes, 5 points, hit a couple of free throws, did hit his only three-pointer, one of his three-pointers that he took tonight. You know, I think that he's going to continue to work his way into form. I know a lot of Nets fans are probably upset given that the Jared Allen stuff that was reported today. We'll get to that probably a little bit later. But, yeah, he's struggling a little bit. And, you know, hopefully this is an impetus and a motivating factor for him. I think he's going to use this to spur himself to get better. I'm an optimist by nature, Nick, and I don't want to downtrod on a guy who has been struggling. And it's not like he's horrible, but he just gets found out, especially against these more physical big teams. And unless he's going to be Kyle Korver or Duncan Robinson or Joe Harris, then, you know, he's not going to add a heap of value.
Yeah, I feel like Landry Shamet just needs the Nets to have a blowout or something where he can play like a good 25 minutes or something so he can just get a lot of shots up, you know, so he can start to get some rhythm and feel a little bit more confident, because it is hard to find rhythm and confidence when you play 11 minutes. You know what I mean? It's not like you're going to get into that same groove. That's something he has to get more comfortable with, given this could be, you know, his role for the team the entire year or moving forward in the NBA. But you also wouldn't hate seeing Tyler Johnson, who was back tonight. You know, even if it's try him out for 2 minutes and see how he does. I think he's obviously not the same level defender as Bruce Brown, but he brings some of that type of energy for those hustle plays that, you know, are missed at times, especially late down the stretch. I feel like the Nets need to get a couple more loose balls. It just happens that they're insanely talented offensively.
Yeah, no, and look, Tyler Johnson, he'll probably use at some point in time. You know, the Nets are playing some heavy minutes for a lot of their starters, so yeah. I think that he's going to be utilized at some point in time. But I also think that maybe Joe Harris going to the bench look, again, it's me trying to be an optimist. Hopefully impacts Landry Shamet positively, because if all the guys are worrying about the best shooter in the league right now, then that's going to leave the dude who's trying to work his way into form from the perimeter and elsewhere open for some of these shots. And it's not that it's not always just about his shot either. It's just that sometimes when he doesn't have the ball in his hands and when he's not shooting the ball, is he impacting the game positively? And for a lot of the players on the Brooklyn Nets team, from Joe Harris to Bruce Brown to a lot of other guys, you can certainly say yes. And especially when you are a role player and you need to be able to contribute beyond hitting the scoreboard.
Yeah, I agree, Jack. I think there was a stretch in this game. He got called for an offensive foul. Get the ball that was blocked, I think, by Kevin Durant. He thought it went off Bobby Portis and didn't end up grabbing it. Ended up being Bucks' ball. And then that same possession, he fouled Giannis. So it's like, it feels like a lot of Landry Shamet's mistakes are like really clustered together. And it makes him seem worse than he is. Because like you said, there are moments where he's fine out there. It's just like he's struggling in certain situations. But TLC, I thought it was kind of one of his rough nights, which we know occasionally happens with him. You know, Chris Middleton was a little bit too much for him to handle. And offensively, he just didn't really have it going. Which is funny because he had one of the best games of his career against the Bucks in the bubble.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he was a starter in a completely different sort of role and completely different sort of team as well. You know, bring back Dante Hall, Sean. But in saying that, you know, I've mentioned this before and I'll keep bringing it up. TLC is a bipolar player. And when you are a role player, you need to provide, you know, to get regular minutes and to impact the team positively, you need to do intangible things well. You need to provide a level of consistency. That's one thing that, you know, Joe Harris is a role player. You know, as much as I love him and I think he's the superstar, he's a role player. Bruce Brown's a role player. Back in the time, you know, Jared Allen, maybe not Caris LeVert, but Jared Allen was a role player. Jeff Green is a role player. These guys are doing the little things well, and when the game is thrust upon them, they know when and how to execute. And, you know, TLC doesn't have the greatest basketball IQ either, and it sometimes gets found out against the better teams. And, you know, he's going to have to improve if he does want to earn regular and consistent minutes, because this team is only going to get better and he's going to need to perform. And hopefully that brings out the best in him, like with Landry.
Yeah, I agree, Jack. And I think that one skill that hopefully he can just continue to get better at is just being a better defender. You know what I mean? And I think it's somewhat the experience, just being out there and going against some of these really good players to understand their tricks of the trade and then what they're trying to do against him. Because like you said, sometimes it's just a basketball IQ or someone just being maybe a little bit more clever on the court and putting him in a compromised position.
Yeah, I mean, he's had his role change quite a bit as well. You know, at the start of the season, he was starting.
Started for a minute, yeah.
Yeah, he was starting for a minute. So obviously, that change in role, that change in what you're needed to do for the team, it's hard. You know, and we said that about other players as well. Be it, you know, Caris LeVert or Spencer Dinwiddie or these sort of guys. You know, Joe Harris has been thrusting in and out of the starting and bench sort of role. You know, DeAndre Jordan as well. You need to be able to adjust to those changes because the NBA is ever-changing, especially in this season more than any other. So, look, hopefully these guys can continue to improve, because we're going to need that depth, Nick. I think right now we know the nucleus of the Brooklyn Nets is great. We know the five or six that we've sort of alluded to, but we need 7 and 8. And I think in the regular season it's going to be fine, but we need 7, 8, and 9 for when it does matter, when we're versing the Milwaukee Bucks in a 7-game series.
Yeah, and you don't want to necessarily depend on your guys so much. You want to have options in case there's foul trouble or, you know, an ankle sprain or something minor where somebody needs to miss a game or two. So I think kind of getting these guys a little bit better, or maybe it's just kind of making roster improvements, in which we mentioned, you know, Sean Marks does still have 3 spots.
Absolutely. I'm sure that he'll be doing a little bit of work there. There's no doubt. Do you want to get to some quotes, my dude?
Yes, sir. What do we got, Jack?
We've got Steve Nash and Joe Harris. Joe is tough as nails. Elite shooter. Doesn't need the ball. He's a great fit for our team. I mean,
Take Steve.
Steve, come on. I know. He's providing the spice for the buzz right now. One thing, though, that I think is probably a takeaway that I did want to bring, Nick, he also talked about the idea of engaging in 120-point shootouts. We have to improve defensively. Cause defense an important thing if the Nets want to go far. Then you get spurts out of the Nets. Defense, and I'm going to probably put out some plays tomorrow, but you get spurts out of it, but then they leak so easily at other points in time. Do you have any confidence that it can improve, Nick?
Yeah, I think I have some confidence it can improve in just to the extent of the communication. Like, there's plays where they just give up literally wide open buckets. Like that play to Giannis where he just came running down the floor and no one picked him up and he got a free dunk at the rim. Like, that's just something you can clean up. And I think that happens, you know, at least once a quarter, if not more. So you just figure if you clean some of that up, that's maybe 8 to 10 points a game. And I think that can make a huge difference. And also, I think some of the effort at times is a little bit, you know, lazy, especially in the offensive rebounds when it comes to closing out on three-point shooters, which is one of the harder things to do in the NBA. But I think they can improve on that. I think also just kind of like we've talked about a lot with this team. They've barely practiced. They lack team cohesion on that end of the floor. You know, I think offensively you can play almost with just your instincts, in which you kind of mentioned a lot with James Harden. But defensively, I think that takes more experience, more chemistry, and just more reps together. And the Nets are really missing that. And obviously, yeah, talent isn't the highest.
No, definitely. And look, I'll get to some quotes that relate to that from James Harden. But I was looking at, you know, the defensive ratings and all that sort of thing. And the Nets, I think, were like 15th or something, and which is probably, you know, an encouraging sign at this point in time. But, you know, the Clippers were like 19th or 20th. And it doesn't seem like they're getting the criticism and everything. I've heard maybe one podcast sort of speak about it. Yep. Because, you know, they're obviously integrating some new things. And Luke Kennard, Lou Williams, and these sort of guys. So I think that the Nets are okay. You know, if this is happening in game 70, that's when you continue to start worrying. And, you know, to me, it is the biggest question. But, you know, at the end of the day, is that big question offset by the amount of offensive brilliance? To an extent. But the Nets are going to need to play some defense. And as James Harden said, smiling to Matt Brooks and the Nets media, I'm excited for practice, honestly. Excited to watch film and get better. He also did say this. The big good thing about me is I'm not a one-dimensional player. And he said he's feeling pretty good, quote, after playing 41 minutes tonight along his sort of conditioning. Do you think James Harden seems to be really buying in as a Brooklyn Net, it seems, Nick?
Yeah, he seems really happy. He just seems like he has that extra juice, that extra energy. And I think he's just really hyped to be playing with Kevin Durant again. You know, he's talked a lot about how great Kevin Durant is, how easy it is. And he also just mentioned the amount of talent on this team. And, like, not to say that every Rockets team he played on was bad or anything like that, but some of them just lacked some of this, like, versatility. You know what I mean? They were just kind of forced to play one way, or it was like a lot of James Harden and Chris Paul, and now it's just like there's so many different elements to this team and what they can do. So I think he's just excited for the opportunity, and I think he realizes, given how long he's been in the NBA and he hasn't been back to the finals since OKC, that he needs to really buy into this moment and take advantage of this opportunity.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, he's relishing it. You know, he's probably as motivated as any superstar in the league right now to have some form of success. He needs it probably more than any other player at the same time as well. But Nick, do you want to get to some other stuff? There's some other quotes here and there, but nothing necessarily that's worth talking about. The thing that I wanted to probably start off with is that the scary hours seem like they're going to be beginning against the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, it looks like, you know, there was a chance we'd see Kyrie today. It ended up not happening, you know, given the Nets kind of want to get him in better shape and conditioning, given he's missed so much time. So I think that's kind of the reasoning behind that. But it should be insane seeing him play Cleveland. You know, it's funny, and I saw a stat too, is he's only playing Cleveland, I think, once since like 2017.
Well, he's an injury-prone player, and, you know, and we heard Steve Nash say that he's excited as well in the post-game presser to get him back, and there is going to be a practice. We heard him say that he's been kept out for conditioning reasons and for health and safety protocol reasons. I mentioned something on JBT that I sort of reading between the lines. If you want to sort of hear about my maybe controversial thoughts, check out that on the OTG Basketball YouTube, Off the Glass on YouTube, because I don't necessarily think it was just health and conditioning and those sort of things. But also, Nick, it'd be remiss of us. We are one of, you know, a couple of different platforms that do highlight Kyrie Irving and his awesome brilliance off the court. According to Steven Jackson, when he was on a podcast at the rematch, he alluded to that Kyrie Irving had bought a house for George Floyd's family. I mean, Kyrie Irving can do a lot of dumb shit and he can do a lot of bad, but his heart is as pure as hell.
Yeah, Kyrie Irving, it can be an annoying person, but he is a good person. You know what I mean? You have friends that annoy you sometimes, but you love them and they always do the right thing. And that's, you know, Kyrie Irving is that person. As much as he might have annoyed you, he might make questionable decisions, say things that are somewhat irrational. But at the end of the day, he's a good person and he has no issue helping others. And we've seen that on occasion after occasion after occasion, especially when people are in need, Kyrie Irving steps up on a regular basis.
And you know the one thing as well is that he never broadcasts it. It's always everyone else for him. It's just like Steven Jackson told the media about this. We would you could only imagine that what else he is doing behind the scenes that we don't know about. You know, he does so much for the community at large. He is an empath by nature. He does so much for everyone else. And look, there's some times where you can be a little bit self-righteous and, you know, do some things that make you go scratch your head a little bit. But, you know, these sort of acts are just...
They're really what matters. If you're judging a person's character, this is what you should judge.
Yeah, this is his character. You know, his basketball character, you can question that, and you can question some of his decisions and his motivations in relation to that, but you can't question Kyrie Irving, the man, the person, because he is a tremendous citizen of the world, and the world needs more people like Kyrie Irving, and the nature that he has is just nothing but empathetic and giving. He's goddamn awesome. Nick, now, I was alluding to this earlier. I was teasing a little bit earlier. Brian Windhorst revealed that the Nets tried to shop Landry Shamet in an attempt to keep Jared Allen out of the James Harden trade. Obviously, they got the Milwaukee Bucks late pick so that they could trade it, forward it to the Houston Rockets. Man, it makes me sad hearing this. I almost didn't want to hear about it and know it.
Yeah, I mean, if the Nets were able to keep Jared Allen in that trade, I think they would be title favorites. Like, I think that's how good of a player Jared Allen is and how much he fills a need for this team. And just imagine the catch radius he has in comparison to DeAndre Jordan and working with James Harden. I think, to me, it just kind of almost seems like a little bit of fluff, because even if they were able to move Landry Shamet for a pick, they still had to worry about getting off Torian Prince's contract. And from my understanding, I think Seth Partnow mentioned this when the trade first happened, is the main reason Jared Allen was set to Cleveland was to get the first round pick, but also get off Torian Prince's contract. So it was kind of a 2-for-1 thing. And even with Landry Shamet or Sadiq Bey or whoever they could have drafted with that pick, I don't think they still carry enough value in which Jared Allen had that was able to go to Cleveland and get the pick and get off Torian Prince's contract. Even though Torian hasn't been that bad, his number is still a little inflated.
Yeah, and a great piece from Christian Winfield of the New York Daily News talking about you know how apparently both of the guys found out on the way to the Knicks game that they had been traded. And look, both of them don't necessarily have ill feelings toward the organization. You know, this is what Jared Allen said. You know, James Harden is probably one of the best scorers we've seen in our generation. Same with Kevin Kyrie, the great point guard he is. I probably would have done the same thing. At the end of the day, your job as GM is to make sure you're the best basketball team that you can have. Nick, I have so much love for Jared Allen. My heart bursts. It bursts.
Yeah, I mean, I think I always love Spencer Dinwiddie because he understands where he stands in the NBA and who he is in comparison to other players. You know, he's still confident saying he's the best, but like when the Nets got this team, he was like, okay, I understand that I have to change it to a new role because it's Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And Jared Allen, it seems like, has that same idea of like who Jared Allen is in the NBA currently. You know, he could still ascend to being a really, really good player, but at this point in time, he understands that James Harden is one of the best in the league. And not to take that to heart. If anything, it's kind of almost a positive, like, hey, I was traded for literally one of the best players in the league. It's not like he was traded for Aaron Gordon.
Yeah, and look, my tweet that I put out about Jared Allen and what he's done, what he does for the kids at Thanksgiving and teaching them about budgeting and maths and but still doing numbers. And my guy, Larry Nance Jr., even got out there and tweeted about it. So he's going to have... I love the Cavs now. They're probably my second favorite team. Shout out to the Sex Land and the Trees. Maybe we got to get a tree for that at designtree.com, dsgntree.com/offtheglass. But yeah, this is probably the one that breaks your heart even more, Nick. He said this. I'm going to miss seeing the smiles on the kids' faces. Definitely going to miss having Whole Foods right around the block, being able to walk across the street, go to a grocery store. It's going to be a lot of things that I'm going to miss about Brooklyn. We are going to miss Jared Allen so freaking much.
Yeah, I think you obviously will miss him on the court, but off the court too, like you said, the things that he does in the community. And he's just like such a like almost simple guy to an extent that just makes you enjoy him. You know what I mean? Like he loves the small things in life. He loves his video games. He loves making computers and stuff. So I think it just kind of makes him a little bit more lovable.
He's got a just a wonderful soul, an old school sort of soul. Make this. There is no darkness and nothing in his heart. He is nothing but pure. And yeah, shout out to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Hopefully they're making the playoffs, and maybe we can verse them in a cheeky 1-8 series or 2-7 series. But yeah, it's going to be so freaking weird going up against him. And it's his first game, and he was sort of saying as well, it's just like, you know what? It's going to be nice to sort of say goodbye now. Jared Allen against DJ. There's a part of me that wants Jared Allen to play so damn well just to shove it up the Brooklyn Nets, because sometimes our love for the player extends beyond the franchise, and when you're a person who is as good and as talented and is just awesome in general as Jared Allen, you've got nothing but the good things for him.
Yeah, I mean, DeAndre better be ready to box out. I think Jared's going to come to play. I think he's going to have a lot of energy. He's also gotten plenty of rest. You know, he hasn't played in since like last week, so I think DJ better be ready. I think DJ will be a little bit more up for it, though, knowing this is a guy that he kind of helped mentor for like the last year and change. So like, you know, it should be a good game, a good matchup.
Yeah, it'll be fun, no doubt. And our hearts are going to be breaking even more, finally seeing him in that maroon gold. But yep. Nick, did you want to touch on Steven Jackson first, or did you want to touch on the roster completion?
Ooh, that's a good one. I guess they're kind of connected. So I guess let's touch on Steven Jackson first.
All right, Steven Jackson responded to Shannon Sharp on his Instagram. I love me a bit of Shannon Sharp every now and then. But Matt Barnes commented saying, "I'm trading Kyrie and his BS for depth. Nets are scary." Matt Barnes is also scary when he's committing domestic violence against certain people. And look, I like Matt Barnes at certain points, but this is just nah. No.
I mean, I understand to the extent of which he's saying. I'm not saying that I would do it, but from an outsider perception saying that they think that you could trade Kyrie and get depth, that doesn't really make sense, though, into the extent of, like, stars win in the NBA. Like, having three stars is better than one, like, or better than two. You know what I mean? If it was, like, trading Kyrie Irving for another, like, star center or something, yeah, maybe that makes more sense to kind of balance out your team, but like trading him for depth just doesn't really work. And obviously we know the relationship with Kevin Durant, and also I think the relationship with James Harden to an extent. They're not super close, but I feel like there's
Team USA.
Say it again, Jack.
They've connected a Team USA. There's some videos of them sort of shooting together and having a bit of fun and having some laughs.
And I think there's a want from them to kind of do this as a trio. You know what I mean? To go there and do this thing. So, I mean, I get what Matt Barnes is trying to say. I disagree with it. And I'll be happy to see Kyrie Irving in a Nets uniform with James Harden and Kevin Durant.
Yeah, excited. Scary hours are upon us very, very soon, my friend. We had the New York Post. Brian Lewis put out a nice little piece about the Nets sort of filling out the roster, and Sean Marks showing some patience, apparently, in that process. Now, names that we didn't necessarily contemplate on this pod as at this point, you know, we've done Dwayne Dedman to death, we've done Rondae Hollis-Jefferson to death, but some other names that were talked about were Corey Brewer, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and Aussie Thon McCurr. Also Tyson Chandler and Kenneth Faried, but I don't really want to talk about them, even though Kenneth Faried seems to be getting a lot of traction. No thanks. I would prefer Thon McCurr, maybe Michael Kidd-Gilchrist to a lesser extent, and Andre Robertson, who you brought up quite a few times, Nick. Thon McCurr, what do you think he could add as a young, sort of up-and-coming athletic big?
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing with Thon is that he's really raw, and it's just hard to envision him playing a consistent role in a championship team. Like, I think that's what the question was to him is, because it's not that he doesn't have talent, it's just that it's not disciplined yet, and he just doesn't necessarily have the best understanding of the NBA. Maybe if he wanted to come in and buy in and block shots and rebound and catch oops, I think that'd be a possibility, but I just feel like the Nets would feel more confident in a veteran center, just somebody that has that playoff experience and that they could go out there and do the thing. I think if this was a role where you only needed him as your third center, I think he'd make more sense. But the Nets really need this center that they're going to acquire or sign to play real minutes. And they might be counted on in the playoffs, given DeAndre has been so sporadic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really, really hoping that Dwayne Dedman is the guy. He just makes so much sense. A good rebound that can space the floor a little bit. And I don't know why he's not an NBA team right now, to be honest. But I think some of these off-the-court stuff with the Sacramento Kings and the Atlanta Hawks is probably partly why. But Yeah, I think that Vex, you need that experience, is probably what is going to matter. And whether, you know, Rondo Hollis-Jefferson can provide a little bit of that, but, you know, a Trevor Ariza seems to make some sense, as does an Andre Robertson. You know, some wing, some depth, some defense, some just guys that you know that you can sort of count on and contribute with. And Trevor Ariza also has a history with Mike D'Antoni in Houston as well. So I think any of those four names that I alluded to would be nice little upgrades over, you know, Landry Shamet, TLC, these sort of dudes.
Yeah, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is a guy I wouldn't hate either, just because he provides you a wing body. I know he played some small ball center in Dallas for a little bit too, so that's just like something else to consider. His jump shot is, you know, one of the worst in the NBA, but he does provide other aspects to his game and that, you know, can have a positive influence on a team. I actually posed a question today on Twitter about, you know, who is the best player that could be bought out this season. There was a couple of people who thought Andre Drummond could be bought out. I think it's probably unlikely. I think Trevor Ariza is a guy that's more likely, like you've kind of brought up. Some people have brought up Hassan Whiteside. I think that would almost be like having another DeAndre Jordan to an extent.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that we need some steadiness with the center position. Yeah. Whether it's extra wings, you know, I don't want to waste a spot on, you know, as much as Andre Drummond is incredible and one of the best rebounding players in the league, he isn't going to be playing meaningful minutes in the postseason. Whereas I could see Trevor Ariza playing 15 minutes. I could see Andre Robertson playing 10 minutes. I could see Dwayne Debin playing 15 minutes. I can't see that from Andre Drummond for as talented as he is. You know, I can see it maybe in spurts, but his defense is improving and is okay. But I think, you know, against an Anthony Davis, and I just think that he's, look, I'm not saying that, you know, Dwayne Debin is better than Andre Drummond. Andre Drummond, Corey, please stay listening. Please stay subscribed, my friend. But Andre Drummond is an incredible player and does a lot of great things offensively. I just think that what the Nets need doesn't necessarily mesh and gel. I think that his skills would be better served elsewhere in like a Toronto or a Boston or somewhere else like that.
Yeah, and I thought of another trade candidate would be Nerlens Noel. As like, you know, the athletic switchy big, which is like the complete opposite of DeAndre. Obviously, he's not like the most ideal center because he still lacks like stature and size. But I think he would at least give you a type of versatility. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Knicks were willing to trade him for a second or something. I think he's on a 1-year deal.
Yeah, add in a JaVale McGee, who's sort of just a vet version of Nerlens Noel in a lot of respects. You know, he's got himself some chips. He knows how to sort of contribute in a small role.
Thing I like about Noel better than McGee, though, would be that Noel is a lot more comfortable switching out to the perimeter. You know what I mean? Yeah. He still has good foot speed, but McGee would give you a better choice against a guy like Joel Embiid because he's still big. You know, Noel would get cooked.
And we'll wait and see how it pans out, Nick. The patience is probably not something that us as Nets fans are used to having. Sean Marks is normally good at it, but hopefully we do see some upgrades and some additions because, three more spots, whether Perry gets converted or whether Jeremiah Martin or Elia Kobo, I would prefer to see some vets in there because championship teams need those vets.
Yeah, they need a wing. I think I saw a report somewhere that Sean Marks is going to wait it out and let this team play a couple games before he makes a move to see what they need. But I think just an example for the second unit, we saw them put out a lineup of James Harden, Landry Shamet, Bruce Brown, TLC, and Reggie Perry. And I think that's it's just too small. Like, especially against some of these teams, like, you need to have a backup wing. If we could just clone Jeff Green, that'd be cool.
Yeah, he's been... Man, we didn't really chat much about Jeff Green, but his performance tonight, you know, he just does everything. Like, he's doing everything that we want. We want him to chip in for a little bit of defense. You want him to switch on to Giannis for a couple of possessions or Brook Lopez, get some important rebounds, hit some threes. He was on fire from three tonight, you know, consistently hitting that little post fadeaway that he loves. He is one of the best vet minimum signings. I'll say it till my voice is hoarse. He is an insatiable, incredible vet minimum signing.
Yeah, and like you said, the 4 or 5 from three, that's just like a bonus. I'd never anticipate him knocking down all of his, you know, most of his threes. If he hits one for the night, I'm pretty happy with that. He's more there for the rebounding and the defense, and he provides a really nice option for the team. And occasionally, like we've mentioned before, he'll jump into his bag and pull something out and, you know, hit a fadeaway bucket on somebody.
Yeah, I mean, this season, Nick, he's hitting 45.5% of his three-pointers.
Yeah.
And that percentage is only going to go up because that's via Basketball Reference. So after tonight, you'd expect it to probably go up to 46, 47%. So, look,
I bet they're all wide open, too. Like, his threes are all just usually he's pretty patient, and it's just like I'm going to have my slow approach and just...
Yeah, it's the Uncle Jeff, the old man Jeff sort of 3.9. Look, he has been an incredibly important piece for the Brooklyn Nets on and off the court. And thank you, Sean Marks, for making that signing, because they are incredibly important for this Brooklyn Nets team.
100%. Jack, anything else you want to touch on before we get out of here?
Nah, mate, got plenty. I'm sure that we'll have plenty more to talk about when the scary hours are, as they do continue to approach. But, man, it's fun being a Brooklyn Nets fan right now.
Yeah, 100%. And just a quick shout out to Martin Luther King. Obviously, it's Martin Luther King Day, just to show our appreciation. We dove a little bit deeper on the outlet, but it's important to recognize what he did for everything in this country and the life that we live now, and being able to enjoy the sport in which we live. So obviously, huge amount of respect and appreciation for a man of his magnitude and the impact he had on the world today. But as always, a pleasure, Jack, and big thanks to everybody for listening.
The time is always right to do what is right.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.